And this is the point of education, I think. And this is the point of the spiritual life, too. God is one of these types of beings. God is the not only the greatest being, he is being itself. And so he is knowable. He's so knowable, in fact, that without proper discipline and his help, we won't know him at all. We'll only know what he's not. But God in his grace reveals himself to us in Jesus Christ, who says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, because he's made God so accessible to us, so close to us. The fullness of Godhead dwells in him bodily, so that by knowing Jesus, I know the truth, and the truth sets me free. And so to me, this transcendental of truth is so profound for the Christian who wants to live a life every day in God, because the truth of Jesus Christ, the truth that is offered to us, is always available to us, but it takes training and it takes discipline to access that truth, to know that truth, and to grow in that truth.
Welcome to Le Bon Vie, the podcast where we talk about the good life and the good ways of achieving it, that intersection between our Catholic, classical, and Cajun heritage. I'm one of your hosts, Kyle Alberato, joined with the great Deacon. How you doing today, Deacon Conk?
I'm doing great. You know, the school year's in full swing, and it's just a blessing to be at John Paul the Great Academy, and I hope everyone is having a great year so far. Like I am.
Very true. True statement.
And I think you're segueing into our topic today, which is truth. Is that what you're after?
Very forceful segue. It's one of those, it's like one of those segues that has all-terrain wheels on it.
Mm-hmm.
And just plowing through.
Yeah, you're just shoving that topic in there. I love it. We're talking about truth today. It's part of our series on the transcendentals. And so if you haven't listen to our previous two episodes, we would encourage you to do that, especially the first one where we introduced the transcendentals. That'll help make all of it make sense to you. But this episode stands on its own as well.
It does, or it can. So let's let's give a brief primer about what do we mean by the transcendentals, and what are they, and how should we think and relate to them? And an analogy I want to provide as kind of a summary of what we talked about before is that the transcendentals, they're these aspects of being that are convertible with being, which means that they can be identified with being. So all being has unity. All things with unity are being. And so when we think about unity, truth, goodness, and beauty, these are aspects of being that permeate all things that exist and that are windows into existence. And these are aspects of being that nourish the soul. One of the definitions of classical education, again, is the cultivation of wisdom by nourishing souls on truth, goodness, and beauty. For whatever reason, a lot of them leave out unity, but we won't. And this notion of nourishing souls on the transcendentals, I want to give an analogy of food. And so one of the things that tends to be the case is that the closer food is to its natural state in the world, the more healthy it is. Put another way, the less food is processed, the more accessible are the aspects of food that nourishes the body. However, there are master chefs, chefs that are able to take those ingredients and bring out the nutrition and make the food more delicious and more accessible to us, while at the same time preserving their their nutrition and their healthy benefits. And so someone who eats healthy food is going to feel and appear to others as vibrant, you know, as healthy. They're going to have a certain kind of energy that people who only eat junk food just don't have, because they're feeding their body food that it's not made for, food that is destructive to the body and not fulfilling to the nature of the body. And likewise with the transcendentals, we don't have to get a telescope and look for them. All things that exist are accessible and relatable through the transcendentals. And so these are categories are aspects of being, of reality, that allow us to enter into reality more fully and nourish our souls on existence. And so someone who may find themselves with chronic boredom, they're just not stimulated by their life or by their existence or by reality, well, it's probably because they're nourishing their souls on junk food, so to speak, as opposed to the transcendentals, which we can describe as soul food.
I love that. Yeah. And beings aren't bad, right? They can be corrupt because God doesn't create bad beings, right? So if we look at the variety of beings that are part of creation, we have everything from dolphins to planets to angels, right? And none of them are bad as God creates them, but there can be a corruption of being. And there's also a corruption of us who are in relationship with being, right? So, and we call this sin. And I think that's why St. Augustine's insight into sin is important here, talking about the transcendentals, is because his insight is that it's not so much that he loved the wrong things, but that he loved creatures rather than the creator, and he loved things more than they ought to be loved. And this is because there is more or less being. Right? Like,
right.
God is a greater being than a dolphin. And a dolphin is a greater being than a rock, right?
Like, right.
And it's not an injustice to the rock or the dolphin or to God to say these things. And why is that important for us? Because I can know that my soul is nourished by knowing God more than it's nourished by knowing a rock. And I can save myself a lot of heartache and restless heart, as St. Augustine put it, to not search after those things that won't give me that nourishment that I'm longing for. But there are more noble beings that exist that I can relate to through knowing them, through pursuing them. And so, for example, like you use the analogy of junk food, music might be applicable too. There's certain music that will nourish my soul because it allows that the music as a being is a more noble creature than other music. Either way, that music is coming in my soul.
Yeah.
You know, and we can call both things music, maybe. Sometimes you can't actually call, you should just call it noise and not music. But there is such a thing as more noble music. And if I only fill my soul with this medium of music, with junk music or music that is corrupted, then I will not be nourished with that thing that I long to be nourished with, which is being itself and ultimately God.
Yeah, that's a great extra analogy of music. We've talked about this distinction before, but the distinction between satiation or being satisfied versus being nourished. And when we look for satiation just to annihilate a desire, you know, I'm hungry, I just want to get rid of that hunger as quickly as possible, so I'm going to grab a bag of potato chips. That's going to eventually satisfy, but you know, you can't eat just one. Why? Because it's an impoverished food. Just like there can be impoverished music. And so if we only listen to music to scratch the itch of the silence in our life, and I know there's a temptation for me sometimes that I only listen to music when I kind of want to be distracted a little bit. And if that's the only way we listen to music, we're going to want music that doesn't challenge our listening.
Right.
And in the same way, we can go about our lives and have our mind be focused on getting things done, which is not bad. It's not bad in and of itself, but without giving God the time, the priority to inform our work. In other words, that reflective life where we give God the first fruits of our time in the day and we focus our priority on, Lord, who are you and who am I? And how can I even come close to paying back today the great love that you've shown through your Son? Send forth your Holy Spirit, Lord, enlighten my mind and enkindle my heart to see you in what I do. So there, yeah, we are going to be getting things done, but the reason why we're getting those things done is in pursuit of that desire of unity with God.
And this transcendental of truth is an important insight into that unity with God, especially in daily life, I think, because so the transcendental of truth, if we want to define it, is simply being as known, that being can be known by an intelligence. And the greater the being, the more can be known of it, the more truth it has to offer. So, for example, a triangle, you know, you've worked with a triangle before. There's a lot you can know about a triangle.
Yeah.
Right?
Cool. You can't even exhaust the amount of things you can know about triangles.
That's acute. Yeah. So, but
don't be obtuse.
Right. All right. So there are things you can know about a triangle, but a person offers greater truth. Why? Because a person is a greater being than a shape, right? So if I, you know, study a triangle, I am studying something that's true because it exists. And there are lots of great things to know about it. And I have an intellect that can penetrate that knowledge and come to understand it. It's a beautiful thing. But a human being who's in front of me, because the human being is made in the image and likeness of God, because they have a dignity of a person made for God and destined for him in heaven, that being is a greater being than the triangle. And so there's more truth there. That doesn't necessarily mean that I can access that truth, because it may be easier for me to learn about the triangle than my neighbor or my spouse or my friend, because there's textbooks on the triangle, but my wife didn't come with a textbook, you know? So sometimes it's hard to know the greater beings that offer greater truth. And this is the point of education, I think. And this is the point of the spiritual life, too. God is one of these types of beings. God is the not only the greatest being, he is being itself. And so he is knowable. He's so knowable, in fact, that without proper discipline and his help, we won't know him at all. We'll only know what he's not. But God in his grace reveals himself to us in Jesus Christ, who says, I am the way, the truth,
yeah,
and the life, because he's made God so accessible to us, so close to us. The fullness of Godhead dwells in him bodily, so that by knowing Jesus, I know the truth, and the truth sets me free. And so, to me, this transcendental of truth is so profound for the Christian who wants to live a life every day in God, because the truth of Jesus Christ, the truth that is offered to us, is always available to us, but it takes training and it takes discipline to access that truth, to know that truth, and to grow in that truth.
That's a great point. And the importance of truth in terms of how it changes our pursuit of truth with the fact that Christ has identified himself with truth, as truth. And so I think an important distinction we can make, not to get too technical, but I wonder if anyone's might be confused with the way we're talking about truth. And it's really because there are two distinctions to be made in how we define and talk about truth. The first one is what you talked about, ontological truth. That being, things that exist, self-communicate always. They are radically intelligible. And the ability to know being and things that exist is because the things that exist, well, their existence is borrowed. It's not in their nature to make themselves exist. Rather, their existence is something that is perpetual, ongoing, and sustained by God's active will. And so the very existence of things participates in the love that God is and shows through the act of creation, which is not something that happened in the past, but is something that is always ongoing. And so when we encounter ontological truth, truth in things themselves, then it is an encounter with God, an encounter with God's ongoing act of creation. But there's this other dimension of truth, this other distinction to make, and we refer to that as epistemological truth. And that is truth as the mind conforming to reality. So truth as it exists in our minds is when we have an idea that actually connects us to reality. And it's hard to really get at that and drive that point home without making this podcast 5 hours long. And then we'd only scratch the surface. But we could have bad ideas, ideas that lack epistemological truth.
Mm-hmm.
A personal example, or not a personal, but an example that could be personal for someone is if you have the idea that a person is simply a jerk, like this particular individual, they're just a jerk. Well, what does that idea do to your ability to relate to that person? That means that every action that person does, you're going to interpret in light of them doing it as a jerk,
mm-hmm.
which is going to be disconnected from who that person is and what's actually going on. Or another example, people don't like to admit this, but many people have the bad idea that traffic doesn't exist.
We act surprised every time it happens.
We act surprised every time it happens. So it's an idea that disconnects us from having expectations rooted in reality. And how does that result? That results in anger and frustration, which is not necessarily how we are supposed to relate to existence, right?
Right.
So when we have ideas that lack epistemological truth, these are ideas that cause our mind to lose conformity with reality. And the result is miserable, is frustration, anger, and ultimately resentment. As Dietrich von Hildebrand, he describes it as throwing a metaphysical tantrum. Whenever, you know, our mind is just so full of bad ideas that are our invention. They're not ideas that we discover from encountering being, but rather ideas that we try to impose on being. That's throwing a metaphysical temper tantrum.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, modern, postmodern thought is just a lot of tantrums. And I think that's why we see a lot of frustrated people around us today, you know. And I love that you brought up this distinction between ontological and epistemological truth. Because I think it helps to clarify what we hope to accomplish at John Paul the Great Academy. We want things that are ontologically true and possess greater being to be the objects of our study while we're at school. This is one of the reasons we choose the great texts of Western civilization. We choose the beautiful paintings. We choose the beautiful liturgy. We want to put in front of us and in our life the most noble things because they have the most truth to offer, because they have greater being, and they're right. going to nourish our souls for what it wants, which is ultimately God, who is truth. But yet those things that are closest to God, those things that are approaching God, they nourish our souls like nothing else. But we also want to train our minds to recognize the truth and have within us epistemological truth so that not only is the beautiful, the noble thing in front of us as true, but I understand the noble thing. You know, this is why we engage with the great texts of Western civilization. And sometimes it's hard, but this is why we do it, because it takes training and discipline for our mind to see the truth that is there. And sometimes it's the sixth time we read the same book, or the hundredth time we see the painting, or the thousandth time we went to Mass and we notice something that we never noticed before. And it takes that repetition and discipline and mastery for our mind to conform to the truth of reality.
Yeah, it's hard to exhaust that idea of the fact that encountering truth ontologically, which is by studying true things and trying to be receptive to that epistemological truth, when our mind conforms to reality, these things are strengthening activities. And to strengthen, you have to damage a little in a certain sense, right?
Yeah, you brought up the analogy earlier, which was great, about the master chef who can take good, healthy food, but make it palatable, make it delicious, and make people actually want to eat it. And the chef, by definition, has to break that food down, has to do things to it, like burn it or cut it or reshape it, right?
Right, right. But also, not-so-masterful chefs can make tasty, delicious food by taking shortcuts to those things.
Mm.
You know, just batter it and fry it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe when we talk about beauty, we can kind of get back to the role of fried foods in experiencing beauty.
Especially boudin balls.
Oh, yeah.
Those are beautiful.
Yeah.
Maybe they're not the most true.
And maybe not. But man, it's good. It's good. We'll get to that next episode. But
yeah, and I think you're bringing up, you know, in education and parents, I hope this is meaningful to you, but the faculty of John Paul the Great Academy chooses the method that we believe with every fiber of our being is the best way to prepare truth for your children, for it to nourish them. And there's a lot of there's a lot of techniques out there in modern education and experiments in education that we view as shortcuts, we view as counterfeits of the real deal, that either doesn't even offer the nourishment to your students that could be offered, or in such a way that makes it impalatable. Like you can't know the truth that's right in front of you because of the methods being used.
Right. Right. A lot of education today in America, and for many of us, our experience of education is this cycle of cram, test, forget.
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle comes with a lot of frustration. It, like John May says in one of his recent books on how to teach science for mastery and for wonder, it's a bad joke that students hate school. I mean, it's a joke in that we all know what it means. We all know what it refers to. We all have personal experiences or know people who have the dominant experience of school as something that is ostracizing, alienating, and basically just makes you feel inadequate. The strange thing, though, is that we are, in a sense, made to know what is true. Our cognitive faculties and our intellectual faculties and our soul are oriented to receive what is true. People might hate school, but they don't hate learning. We love learning.
Mm-hmm.
People really do love learning. In the heart of everyone is this desire to know. And to know in the classical sense, knowledge is relational. When you know something, then you have a certain kind of unity with that thing. You are more unified with it.
I'm glad you brought that up because I think that idea helps to clarify the difference between knowing truth and knowing information. So truth is a union with a being, right? Information doesn't necessarily offer that to me, right? So for example, I can know a lot of facts about history or a particular thing that happened. And okay, so this event, I know some about it, but the truth of that event is much more deeper and profound.
Mm-hmm.
And I can forget, like you said, you know, cram, test, forget. If I'm just filling my mind with information and that's the goal that I'm going to spit out on a test, I will forget it.
Yeah.
Because I don't have union with that thing I was studying, right? But even I've been struck at John Paul the Great Academy. In fact, our new faculty in service a couple months ago, Miss Emily Byers, she did a model class for us. And it was moving to me because she gave us this Shakespearean poem. Poem. I always say that word wrong. Poem.
It's like road.
Poem.
Road. The more you say it, the more it sounds
I'll just say it was
wrong.
A sonnet because it okay. was. But she gave us a sonnet and the way
sonnet?
And the way she taught it was so meaningful. And it was only 15 minutes. It wasn't a 3-hour class or anything, but it was so meaningful that I remember that sonnet. I remember lines from it. I remember because I was able to have a union with this being that is this poem because the method that was used, and it wasn't just information in the room. We were seeking the truth of it together.
Yeah.
And so I was able to unite with it in a meaningful way, 15 minutes of my life that 3 months later I still remember.
What strikes me about that is something ontologically true was offered.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you were invited to experience it was also true in the sense of it enabled your mind to conform to reality through it. And I keep thinking about food. Maybe I'm hungry. But you can attend a 3-hour lecture and walk away with much less than, 15 minutes of encountering truth in a dynamic way. And what I'm thinking about now is you can eat a whole bag of potato chips, let's say Lay's potato chips, and you could even go healthy and get the baked ones.
Mm.
And I'm being very facetious when I say that. But even if you eat the whole family-sized bag of potato chips, you're not going to feel as full as if you ate one baked potato.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the way you internalized the thing that has truth either increases our receptivity of that truth, our ability to process it, or it damages it.
Yeah. And you saying that reminds me, you know, and you brought up too this important classical principle that we get from Aristotle that all men desire to know, like we all desire to know. And you're rightly reminding us that is the way it is because we all desire relationship and union mm-hmm. because we're made for relationship and ultimately relationship with God and the communion of saints. But we all desire that. And that if we don't train our intellect and if we don't learn to nourish our souls on what is true and most true, and that's important because, you know, a rock and a dolphin offer truth, but, you know, they don't offer the truth that God offers. We call it idolatry when we look to lower things to offer us what only God can offer us. And as far as truth goes, and if we don't train our intellect of our students and ourselves, that desire to know that is within us, that thing that is looking to know being, will look in all kinds of places other than God, other than the truth. And even if we don't, you know, become the worst people in the world, we don't want to be mediocre people either. We don't want to be malnourished people. Even if we're not starving people, we don't want to be malnourished either.
Yeah.
We want to nourish ourselves with the full banquet of what is true. Because this is what God wants for us, and it's also what we want for ourselves.
Yeah, and that brings up something we talked about earlier, not in this episode, but before we press the record button, that when we think about the transcendental of truth, it is the radical intelligibility of being, of existence, of things that we encounter. They are screaming to be known. And we do desire to know them, though that desire can be corrupted through sin. But by virtue of our baptism, by our the virtue of faith, by the virtue of hope and by the virtue of charity, we are invited to a feast. And truth, it is that feast that that being wants to be known. And we're invited to know it. And the process is nourishing beyond our imagination.
This is part of the gospel. So this is not just classical education. This is gospel truth. You know, Jesus says, we know the truth, it sets us free. But, you know, we might turn to him and say, well, Lord, show us being itself. Or like Philip said, Lord, show us the Father. And Jesus will say, you've been with me all this time and you don't know who I am, right? Not that he's the Father, but he's the one who is knowledge of the Father. His very person is knowledge of the Father. He is the truth. And so, you know, our goal for our homes and for our school is that we want to be a family. We want to be a school where Jesus Christ is welcomed and that the truth he brings us, which is God himself, is the most important thing about our life. And it's the most important, and it's connected to everything. It's connected to our math and science, our humanities, our recess, our PE, our social lives on campus. Jesus is connected to everything. And if he is, then his truth is connected to everything. And we don't settle for anything less, and we don't contradict it, right, in our homes or in our on our campus. And this is part of something we encourage each other throughout the day and throughout the weeks as we journey together as a school community. But Mr. Alvarado, I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, like a home that, especially with students in the home who are studying things, right? Like studying good things at John Paul the Great Academy. Like, how do we encourage that pursuit of truth as a priority in our life? How do we model that for our kids, but make it a real thing for us as well, that we get a taste for it, right? The good stuff, the things that are really true.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't help but first think about the virtue most related to the transcendental of truth and the vice that is most opposed to it. And so let's start with the good. Let's start with the virtue. That's the virtue of docility. The virtue, and again, I think we've talked about this before, we might have a bad idea of docility. Our idea of docility might not be true. In that it doesn't actually conform to reality. So docility is not being impressionable, meaning that whatever anyone tells you, you automatically believe. That's not docility. And docility is also not naivety. It's not approaching things as if you know nothing about them.
Mm-hmm.
Docility is the virtue that enables us to quickly recognize truth, apprehend it, so to reach out intellectually and grab it, grab hold of it, and to comprehend it, to take it in and have our mind changed by it. And so docility is about being able to recognize the authority of truth wherever it might be found. Whether it's in a personal interaction with someone else, whether it's in, you know, you're reading a book and it has bad theology. So let's say, you know, you're everyday Catholic and you're reading a misinformed theologian, let's say. How do you become docile to the truth and not be duped? You know, when Father James Martin, yeah, I'm going to call him out, promotes like homosexual relationships as like a good human fulfilling thing, well, you got to test the idea. Mm-hmm. How does that play out? You know, does that actually allow your mind to be better conformed to the reality of sexuality in the human person?
Well, I think you're bringing up a very concrete vocabulary that can be in our homes. If it's not there yet, we should introduce it immediately, which is simply the question, is this true?
Yeah.
Because ideas will come in and out of our house, either through the TV, the internet, conversation, or books. It's going to happen. There are going to be ideas presented. And ideas are not the enemy, but truth needs to be pursued exclusively.
Mm-hmm.
In the Old Testament, God says, I'm a jealous God, right? You have no other gods beside me. And because, as you said earlier, our Lord has identified himself as the truth, then we ought to be jealous for the truth in the same way that God is jealous for us, you know?
Yeah.
He wants us wholeheartedly his, then we need to be wholeheartedly for him. And this has to do with our relationship with the truth. We need to be people of integrity and honesty who want to live in the truth and don't want to live anywhere else, right? And so when these ideas come in, it's not the end of the world, but we must ask the question, is this true?
It's a simple question, but it's not easy to pursue. As I mentioned, our experience of truth, apprehension. We have to apprehend it. We have to be able to recognize the idea in being, in things that actually exist and not just as an abstract concept. Then we have to comprehend it, which means we know where its truth comes from. And in that, well, we and ontologically, when we comprehend something as true, we're connecting to Jesus Christ himself. He's the eternal logos. I mean, he is the very intelligibility and meaningfulness of all things. I mean, God spoke creation, the word, the logos. And so,
well, and on that note, I'll add that as Christians, that becomes almost a sacramental reality. For example, in marriage, you know, when I love my wife, it's not the same as when two engaged people love each other, right? So like when I, when I, you know, lay down my own desires or what I want to do with my Friday afternoon and I serve her instead, both are acts of love for the engaged person and for the married couple. But in the other case, in the married couple, that same act has within it a certain sacramentality where God is aiding by his grace in a particular way that union of marriage to be fostered, deepened, and expressed. It's like this with the Christians and truth. I think non-Christian philosophers or those that are seeking the truth in sincerity of heart, they are doing what we are doing when we seek truth in the sense that they are serving the truth, they're seeking the truth, they're wanting to conform their mind to reality, right? But what they don't have, because they aren't baptized, because just, you know, just like married people are bound together, we are bound to the truth in baptism. We have a connection to the truth beyond, you know, we're searching for something grasping in the dark. We have been intimately united with the truth. And so when we discover the truth, wherever it may be, like, you know, Vatican, Second Vatican Council says in Lumen Gentium that wherever truth is found, it belongs to the church because it belongs to Jesus Christ, who is the truth himself. And so wherever we find truth, we find the one who we're already in union with, and it deepens our relationship with him in this sacramental grace that exists in our baptism. And so we pursue truth as Christians in the same methods as non-Christians, studying and, you know, looking at the poem and I mean, hearing the poem and looking at the painting and reading the book. We do the same kind of things, but we are not in the same relationship with truth as someone who's not baptized into it. We have been baptized into truth, who is Jesus Christ.
It can be overwhelming to think about that, because by virtue of these gifts that we have from baptism, the gift of faith, by the skill of the Holy Spirit, we can know God. By the gift of hope, that knowledge of God can be translated into personal trust. And through the Holy Spirit, and the gift of charity, we can love in a way where we can still pursue our own highest good, even if it means the very loss of our life. And we have the great example of Christ for that. The danger, though, is when we're mediocre, when we lose our taste for truth, and we know the Lord's feelings about those who are mediocre. You know, he's going to vomit them out of his mouth.
Well, and just as we said, you know, acts of love between a married couple have a different quality than non-married couples. So too, acts of division or sinfulness or you know, not fulfilling that call to love have a special character when you're married than if they don't, you know? Yeah. And, you know, this is why St. Augustine tells us we have a special obligation as Christians to the truth in particular, because when we deny the truth, when we let threats to the truth into our home, into our school, into our lives, it is particularly devastating for us. It's a particular type of sin. Because yeah. we have been so wedded to the truth in baptism that to turn our back on it, you know, whether it's bad theology or just things that are flat out wrong about people, right? But like we let ourselves think it, we let ourselves, you know, we let people talk about these things as if they're true, but they're not. We have betrayed our spouse. We have betrayed the one we're baptized in.
Yeah. To become mediocre, tepid, or just not having joie de vie, not having this joy of life that's animated by the gospel, is such a waste. And yet we find ourselves in it often.
Yeah.
And there's a great opportunity to talk about the vice that's opposed to truth. And that is the vice of curiositas.
Curiositas.
Yes. Now, many of us have this idea of curiosity, and curiosity itself is not bad. Kind of. But when I'm talking about the vice...
It does kill cats, I'm just saying.
Yeah, but...
Depending on how you feel about cats, that might not be the worst thing.
They only have goodness in that they exist. I'm kidding. I am a dog lover, though. But the vice of curiositas is a particular thing. Not talking about all the uses of the term curiosity, but notice that one who is ruled by curiosity, even in the good sense of the term as we know it, they are effeminate. They are ruled by their passions, not by their will to the good. So when we end up spending an hour on YouTube going down a rabbit hole of curious videos, that's destructive.
Mm-hmm.
And that weakens our will. That makes us effeminate. And not feminine, effeminate. I think that's an important distinction to make. So the inhuman quality of being effeminate is being overly receptive to anything, mm-hmm. as opposed to the virtue of docility, which is being critically receptive to what is most true from who is true, you know? And the vice of curiositas, which I think we often find ourselves in, is the misuse of the intellect for entertainment, for power, for a good other than what the intellect is intended for. So yes, if you pursue class for just a grade, you are engaging in the vice of curiositas, because that's not what the intellect is made for. That is the misuse of the intellect for the sake of prestige.
Mm-hmm. And if you love theology because you love arguing, that's the
vice of curiositas. That is the misuse of the intellect for the sake of power.
Mm-hmm.
But we could also misuse the intellect for the sake of trying to know things that we should not know.
Mm-hmm.
For example, gossip.
Mm-hmm.
Gossip. I hear the excuse all the time from my Cajun brothers and sisters. Well, it's true. And that statement is something that comes right after saying an idea that might be true, yeah, but destroys the character of another person,
mm-hmm.
and that other people don't need to know.
Well, you see, this is the difference between truth and information, right?
Right.
Like, it can be factually true, that's true, but it may not actually reveal the truth of the person we're talking about. Because just because an action took place or something happened, that doesn't mean I'm betraying the truth by giving that information in a way that is misleading. This is something like, you know, those headlines that might mislead us about what the articles, who they're talking about. Just because they said this exact phrase, I now think, oh, you know, this person's untrustworthy, this person, whatever. But in fact, the truth of the matter is much deeper. This is what happens when we gossip about people, even with true things, is that we misrepresent the truth, reality, and what we're giving might be factual, but it's not true. In other words, it's not a union with reality. It's not a union with this actual being or this actual situation.
Right. It's such a perversion of truth. In that, you know, perversions are evil because they twist something that is good. They twist it in a way that is devastating. You know, one of the most disgusting but yet comprehensible examples of perversion is pornography, because it takes something so good, that sexual union that is meant between spouses, that with grace becomes true. And what does it do? It perverts it and aims it at a lower desire. And so what happens to people addicted to pornography? Well, their very appetite for the good of sexuality becomes depraved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, probably an example that's more relatable to me, to you, to our audience is the media.
Mm-hmm.
Why is the media the way it is? Because we have become a culture of addicts to curiositas.
Yeah, and I mean, social media, I'm just making an analogy here, but social media is almost like truth pornography. It twists reality so much so that it would be attractive and keep you engaged so they could sell you things.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, though. You know, in the market, competition drives it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, ideally. But, you know, why does media that placates to gossip, to the misuse of the intellect, why does that sell? Because we've become a culture of very curious people who don't care about truth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, now turning to the home, I think, how do we intentionally get better at recognizing the transcendental of truth in our daily life?
Yeah, I think you gave us a nice examination of conscience, all of us, you know, docility and curiosity and its presence in our home. You know, are we people that are becoming more docile? And that is it easier for us to apprehend what is true, you know, to distinguish it from what is not true? Are we getting mm-hmm. better at that? Is it easy for us to understand and comprehend things that are true in front of us and to grasp it, you know?
Are we practiced in that even?
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, I think we have a low threshold for believing things. Our threshold for believing something as true is often just too low. And it's an interesting paradox, because the gift of faith from our baptism demands that we actually have an increased threshold. You know, before we believe something is true, in light of faith, we have to exercise reason before it. Faith demands that before we accept something as believable, we encounter why it's true before we believe it.
And I think remembering, too, our attention needs to be focused on truth over information. Information can help us get to the truth. But, you know, our conversations over coffee in the morning and our, you know, when we're visiting with friends and those things that we love to talk about, are we seeking truth or are we just sharing information that gets us very excited? Because there is a difference.
There is.
Because there's such a thing as, like, so what? You know, so even if, you know, I watched this video on YouTube or something that had a lot of conspiracy information for me about who did what and said what when and how that made this come about, and that explains everything. There is a question of, well, so what? You know, like, what truth is this getting at? Is this revealing something about myself about God that helps me have a union with God or know myself better? Because that's what truth does. When I receive truth, I'm now united to being more deeply. And not everything does this. And so if my focus, you know, is to read the latest article, watch the latest video so that I can be on top of the information, I could be spending a lot of energy without increasing my union with truth, but I could feel very red-pilled. I could feel very in the know. I can feel like I know more than other people, where in fact, my being can become very malnourished on truth. I can become just information overload and light on the truth.
Yeah, and that takes a devastating toll whenever that disposition is applied to the persons in our household. For example, as a parent, you didn't see what happened, but your children are mad and they have different stories about what happened.
Mm-hmm.
How do you navigate that conflict searching for truth, not just information? Because our kids are really good at picking up on figuring out how to tell us what we want to hear. Because let's face it, confirmation bias is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
We are a lot quicker to accept as true, uncritically, what fits our current beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's not a bad thing, and it's not a good thing either. It's just how the brain is hardwired. So by that virtue of the theological virtue of faith, that gift we have by our baptism, we have to go further. We cannot settle for mere information. We have to go further to inquire about, why should I believe this? Do I have good evidence, good reason to believe this? But I want to caution. It could sound like I'm talking about putting reason before faith, and that's not what I'm talking about. But it's important to note that both our Blessed Mother and the father of St. John the Baptist had questions in light of God's revelation to them. Both of them have questions. We hold Mary up as heroic in those questions she had in light of revelation. Why? Because she already had faith. The reason that followed the faith was to know the revealer, about that intimate knowledge. So Mary already had faith. The reason was exercised because she loved. But, you know, St. John the Baptist's father, he was struck dumb and punished for his questions. Why? Because he was trying to obtain faith through reason. And so when I'm talking about increasing the threshold of when we choose to believe something, I'm not talking about putting reason before faith, but rather having reason in light of faith. Because by the virtue of faith, we believe in God, Father Almighty, creator of the universe, the source of all being, the source of all truth. So that should give us hope that if we inquire into the truth, especially with other images of God, that blessing and grace will follow, even though it's not easy, even though it's hard, even though I have to stop what I'm doing. Let's say I'm cooking dinner, my kids, something bad happens, and they're telling me different stories about what happened. I know discipline needs to take place, and I can't love my kids without getting involved in the conflict, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I could just become complacent and want to get back to work, want to get back to dinner, and, oh, whatever sounds good, let's do that. However, the pursuit of truth requires that we stop what we're doing. Even if it's cooking dinner, take the pot off the burner and go and seek truth with your children.
You know, I encourage you in that example and in others that come up in the home, remember that you as a parent, you have a particular role in speaking the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the docility of your children to the truth is part of that training, is that they're docile to truth as spoken by you. And so there are times where sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's not, but don't be shy to say what is true, you know? some of the best truth they need to hear in situations like that even is, I love you.
Yeah.
Right?
And that love does not depend on who's wrong here.
Right. I'm having trouble understanding the truth here,
but I love you. I need your help.
I need your help. We can work through this. So in other words, to take a situation where truth is a question, what is true, right? And then be the one who speaks truth and then guides them into truth is very important for their training.
Yeah, because they're going to follow our lead. If we're complacent in our pursuit of truth, our children will be too.
Mm-hmm.
And that complacency is the vice of curiosity.
Yeah.
And how we talk to our kids about how they pursue learning.
Yeah.
Are we modeling or are encouraging them to be vicious, to have vice? Because, you know, look, take the risk, folks. I know many people can get tired of hearing from educators, you got to focus on the learning and the grade will follow. I'm sure they get tired of hearing it, but I'm gonna play the I spent 8 years in graduate school studying cognitive science for a doctorate. But the caveat, I have all but dissertation. I don't actually have the doctorate. But I did spend a significant time studying cognitive science. And you know what? The easiest way, the simplest way to have high achievement on assessments is to focus and prioritize learning. And for parents to talk about the learning process. You know, what is true about your child's performance in a class? It's not going to be communicated through a report card. It's just not.
Mm-hmm.
The effects might be, but our job as parents is to invest ourselves into the truth with our children. And the truth of a child's performance in a class can only be uncovered when you have meaningful conversations about what are you learning? How is what you're learning changing the way you think?
Right.
Oh, it's not changing the way you think. Okay. Why? I wonder why.
Yeah. And asking the questions that encourage more serious engagement, like, how has this impacted your relationship with God? How does this impact your relationship with your brothers and sisters? How does this impact your relationship with your teachers? You know, and learning these things and discussing these things. Because it's relationship with being that truth is all about, that we would know the truth, that we would know one another. And encouraging this in our children is so important because that sets the goal for them. It's not to get an A or a B or to get the grade that they're looking to get, but it's rather to deepen relationships with God and others. And that's the point of it all.
Yeah. And even if you're like, yeah, I hear you. I mean, that makes sense to me, but I don't care. We're busy. I want my child to be successful for the future. So, you know, grades are the currency that educational systems exchange for benefit.
Mm-hmm.
I just want my child to be successful. Okay, even if that's what you want, out of justice, you owe your child the best means of doing that, the best means of becoming successful. Which is not to talk about grades. Because again, a lot of students hate school. Yet the human person loves learning. How is that? I think part of that is when we focus on the outcome, we lose the pursuit. We lose the very means of human activity that nourishes the soul. We lose truth, quite frankly. We lose truth. And so when we focus on grades, that leaves little to no room to care about how to obtain grades.
So we've actually had a pretty good list of, I think, of things I'm going to focus on in my home, of things we can do in our home to have a home that pursues truth. So to recap, we focus on docility. We discourage curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
We
talked about nourishing, you know, not being listless, not being slothful, not being mediocre or tepid, but being jealous, as you said, for the truth.
Yeah, and to keep our our focus on what is true in every situation, in particular with schoolwork, because homework is a reality and assignments are a reality. And if we could keep our focus where it needs to be, which is the pursuit of truth in these things and not on the outcomes, not on the performance, not on the immediate results, but on our children's relationship with God and others that this pursuit of truth offers, you know? And so using that language is important with our kids because in their time at JPG, it's going to be challenging and there are going to be moments where it's so much easier to just focus on the grade, focus, you know, because as you said, it's like a currency. It's palatable, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's bound up with a lot of fear of the future. But we need to be baptized persons who are not animated by fear.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's fear of the Lord. But we got to lose our cowardice before truth. We have to have the courage that if I pursue truth, even though it's hard, it's simple, but it's not easy. If I devote myself to truth, if I take those extra steps that, wait, I'm not going to believe this, I'm not going to accept this until I apprehend, comprehend, and are able to make a sound judgment about it.
Mm-hmm.
If we have a higher threshold, then we will be more animated because we'll be more connected to being, both ontologically and epistemologically, in the radical goodness of God's very act of creation sustaining all things. And that's the source of truth, of why we can know them.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to lose that cowardice.
Yeah, and speaking of that cowardice, I guess the only thing I would add to that list, and I think it would be remiss if we didn't, as parents and as teachers, we have to make sure that those things that would promote curiosity, those things that would pervert the truth, the things that would confuse our students and our children, we don't let in our home.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with saying that. You know, it's not the goal of education that every person learns every bit of information in the world. Because the devil knows how to pervert truth. He knows how to take things that are true, pervert them to attack truth and to make it harder to be docile, to make us more curious. And so, you know, there is such a thing as a book that doesn't belong in our home. There is such a thing as a movie we're not willing to watch. There is such a thing as an idea that we don't want to entertain in our home. This is okay to do, and it takes courage to do it. And we need to encourage one another to stand up for the truth in a lot of situations, the truths of our faith, the truth of right reason, right? The truth of living the good life that we talk about living on this podcast. It needs to be stood up for, and it needs to be promoted. And there are elements in this world that want to confuse us about all of it. And so we don't want those things in our home, and we don't want those things in our school. This is why we leave things off our reading list at John Paul the Great Academy.
Yeah. There's a lot of junk food in the world.
Yeah.
And we need to be restless until we have soul food before us.
Soul food, I like it.
Yeah. Transcendental.
Well, I think we have a great quote, Mr. Alvarado, from our patron, John Paul the Great, about this transcendental of truth. Hit us with it.
So this is from Fides Oratio, Faith and Reason. Pope St. John Paul the Great writes, "With a false modesty, people rest content with partial and provisional truths, no longer seeking to ask radical questions about the meaning and
foundation
again. Ultimate. All right. Time in. So in Fides Oratio, Faith and Reason, Pope St. John Paul the Great writes, "With a false modesty, people rest content with partial and provisional truths, no longer seeking to ask radical questions about the meaning and ultimate foundation of human, personal, and social existence. In short, the hope that philosophy might be able to provide definitive answers to these questions has dwindled.
And I think this perfectly captures the type of malaise and dulling of that desire to know that we're describing from eating a lot of junk food when it comes to truth. Just not exposing ourselves to the good, really true things of life and nourishing our souls on that, we become content with information. We become content with surface level truth. And after a while, we stop even caring that there's a deeper truth available to us, right? Like some people don't even care if there's a heaven or not, which boggles my mind. But, you know, that's where you can get, you know, you could
that's a good example of how we can lie to ourselves as an excuse to be complacent. Because even if a person says that, it is not possible for them not to desire good things.
And that takes a lot of faith in humanity to say, but it is true, right? Like it's impossible to not desire the truth and desire good.
Right. But why are they even entertaining that idea that I don't even care if there's a heaven or a hell? Well, because they, in a perverted belief, think that the ultimate good or the ultimate deprivation of their final end doesn't matter.
Yeah. And this is the current of the philosophical world that we live in, that sometimes we don't know where these streams come from, but we're all swimming in it. Like we don't know, Nietzsche and Marx too well, maybe, but we swim in the river that they dug out, right? And so
you can't not encounter Kant.
You just Kant.
You just Kant. But it's like the joke. Maybe we could lighten it up with a little joke. you had some three fish swimming along, and one fish says to the other, "Man, the water feels great today." And the other fish says, "What's water?"
Nice.
These things can be just come so familiar to us that we don't even know they're there. Like confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
Like the misuse of the intellect for personal gain, or not necessarily personal gain, for personal satisfaction.
Yeah.
To serve the self over and above everything else. We might not even notice that our criteria for believing things sucks.
Yeah. Well, and I would invite all of us, in consideration of this quote from our patron, to really wrestle with the idea that we need personal conversion on this. We are not in 100% right relationship with being as truth. There are aspects of our intellect that are dull. There are mm-hmm. aspects of our mind that are prone to curiosity and prone to misuse of the truth. And how do I know this? Because there's a good chance none of us listening or in this booth, for sure, like that we're not canonizable saints yet. And why not, right? Like we say this is a very difficult thing to become a saint. It's actually not.
It's very simple.
It's very simple. And this is part of it. To be a Christian means that I'm so committed to the truth. And to be a saint means I'm so committed to the truth that I've set all of my being towards it. And my intellect is ready to apprehend truth and pursue it and hold on to it. And anything short of that, which is where you and I probably are today, we need conversion. We need to, and this is the point of study. This is why we study at John Paul the Great Academy. That's why you need to study in your homes. That's why we need to take out books and read them and discuss great ideas and enjoy the really true things of life, the things that help us connect to being, because this is how we become the saints God's called us to be. This is how the Martins did it in France with little Saint Therese and the two parent saints, right? Saint Louis and Zélie. How did they have such a holy family? Well, because they pursued truth in their home. They discussed great ideas. They loved music. They loved the joie de vivre, like you were talking about earlier. It was there in their house, and they were relentless in it. They were jealous for it. They didn't let anything else in to their little home. They didn't let it be corrupted by curiosity or every idea or every changing trend in the world. They just lived their little heaven in Lisieux, and this is what our homes can be like here in Acadiana.
Yeah, and here's the thing. They didn't do it perfectly, I'm sure, that there were many days where there was a lot of doubt and uncertainty and even anxiety and fear about how to run the household. But I would submit that it's not doing things well that is going to fuel the pursuit of truth, but rather the earnestness to give God the first fruits of your day, that morning offering, and that examine prayer, mm-hmm. and to give God the last fruits of your day, and allow grace, you know, because it's easy to feel overwhelmed or to feel like I lost my appetite for truth. I just don't have it and I'm helpless. Yeah. Join the club.
Mm-hmm.
Let us thank God that there is grace and that grace is going to increase our appetite for the truth. Hunger is the best spice, and an appetite for truth makes life so beautiful and good. Not easy and pleasant, but beautiful and good. And so it would be remiss if we didn't kind of move toward a summary of how our parents, Adam and Eve, we can often hear, you know, kids at school like, I don't get the original sin. I would never do that. I would never do that. That was so dumb. And in a way, yeah, it is so dumb. But when we think about the original sin in virtue of the transcendental of truth, so what happened? Well, the tree of knowledge, forbidden to eat of. What was given instead? The tree of life. Here's the thing, we encounter truth through encountering life. When we seek to learn information in order to just use it, even if it's to use it for a better career for its own sake, or even if it's to use it to bully someone or to hurt someone who may have hurt us, that is knowledge divorced of life. And so in a way we could think about that tree of knowledge as the misuse of truth, wanting to be the source of truth as opposed to receiving it from life, from what is holy and sanctifying.
Yeah, I love that. And the effect of that misuse is a disconnection with truth, right? A loss of
yes.
truth, that they were separated from being itself, truth itself, who is God. And that's the tragedy of sin. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we have to ask ourselves, am I perpetuating the original sin? Am I eating that junk food from the tree of knowledge? And I guess to be more concrete with it, do I place greater confidence in my own ideas as opposed to paying attention to why they should be true? Am I complacent with regard to finding out and discovering if things are true, as opposed to just, well, it's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's an expression that I really wanted to say that I'm losing at the moment. Yes. Okay. Sorry. Took me a little while to find it, but do we have poverty in spirit with regard to truth? And it's easy to lie to ourselves. It's so easy to deceive ourselves. One, because, you know, the brain is very good at trying to find the biggest shortcut to processing information. That's just biology, or the biological way the brain works. And that has also been corrupted by sin. And so, in what concrete ways am I poor in spirit with regard to truth? Where did I actively seek God through truth today? And where did I compromise that seeking because I just ate the junk food? I settled for less.
It's a heavy-hitting episode. A lot of examining to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Well, the good life is a true life.
Mm-hmm.
It's rooted in the truth. It's not a false life. Because false lives don't last forever. They come to an end. But the true life, that is with God, the good life, does last forever. And that's the beautiful thing about it. It is true, and it's true enough to exist forever and for eternity. And so that's the life we want to live here and now and forever. Thank you so much for this conversation. This has been something.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And if, again, just to try to encourage and invite, and maybe to lighten things up a little bit, because, you know, that, like, both the truth and the ocean are deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and both will invite you to drown. But it's good. As we're going to talk about and explore next episode, it's good. It's good. So, in the words of our patron, be not afraid. Seek truth. Love God above all things.
Amen. Well, thanks for joining us on Le Bon Vie. We'll be back again next episode as we continue our series on the Transcendentals. It'll be a good time.
Good time.
On the good life. Le Bon Vie.
Vive Le Bon Vie.